This is the Welcome to Fatherhood Podcast. I'm your host. My name is Kelly, and I'm here to remind you, however you're listening and wherever you're listening, that as dads, we're just like moms. Except we're dads. Ha ha! All right, my guy, why don't you go ahead and start by please introducing yourself?
My name is Rob Gorski. And I am a dad. I'm a single dad. I have three kids, 14, 16, and 22. I got confused for a second because I was going to list them in a different order, but 14, 16, and 22. All of my kids happen to be autistic, which adds, you know, some unique challenges to life. But, you know, we're doing pretty good.
You yourself are a fellow podcaster. Mm-hmm. And you run a podcast called The Autism Dad.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the content that you explore in your podcast. How did you get to that point of creating a podcast?
Yeah. So that's a good question. I started writing, I think it was like 2010, I think is when I started. And it was just sort of it was supposed to be an outlet for me, because I was really struggling with some of the behaviors that my oldest was dealing with at the time.
Yeah.
And I set up this WordPress site. I thought it was private. And so I was just using it as like a journal, right? Where you just word vomit everything that you're thinking.
Yeah.
That nobody else should ever hear. And it wasn't private and people started reading it.
Yeah.
And like I was mortified at first because I thought like, oh my God, like that's, I can't even believe it. That's happening. but the feedback that I was getting from parents was like I thought I was the only one. Or, you know, I felt so isolated. I didn't think anybody else was feeling this way or dealing with these types of challenges. And it sort of became this, therapeutic avenue for me as well as for other people who, have been feeling like they're alone or they're isolated, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that went on for a long time. Well, it's still going on actually. But I've written like, I think it's like 13,500 something posts over the last, I don't know, 13 years or so.
Wow.
And I just sort of burned out, you know, like coming up with titles for things was, it just got to be like a chore and it wasn't helpful for me anymore.
Yeah.
And I'm big into tech, so I'm always looking to like try new things in that area. Excuse to like get something cool to like,
yeah,
you know,
to buy a new toy.
We're talking about like the Rodecaster and whatever. And so I thought, you know, it might be easier just to like talk instead of trying to write everything down. And so I started doing that, and it started out really small, like, I think I was using like Anchor at first and just like talking into my phone. I would just sit in my bed and talk into the phone and it's really horrible. So nobody should ever go back and listen to the old stuff.
Please go back and listen to the old stuff.
Yeah, please go back and listen to the old stuff. Wow. but you know, like you learn, like I had no training in this, so I kind of had to teach myself as I went, and I just found it to be, a really interesting experience, especially when I stopped being like just me talking on a phone and like talking to other people, mm-hmm. you know, like bringing guests on and having conversations with people like we're having now. And, mm-hmm. you know, you get to experience other people's, you get to kind of get a feel for what other people's experiences have been. And it's a great way to help other families out there connect with other people who get it in my case.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's been really cool, and you know, it's a lot of work. It's not as, when I went into it, I thought like, oh, this will be so much easier because like I'll just record something thinking like I was going to do it all in one take and everything would be perfect, whatever. And it doesn't work that way. And it takes forever to get this stuff done. But I find myself like, I enjoy going through and editing everything and cleaning it up and, you know, being able to, like, when someone asks a question, I have a support forum for parents and people will ask questions sometimes about things. I'm like, oh, hey, I did an episode on that and I had this person on and I can just, you know, send the link to that and then they can hear the whole conversation and it's really helpful to people. And it's sort of, I have this like habitual need to help people. And this is how I kind of get that fix, I guess. You know, I used to be a fire medic and I got hurt, so I can't do that anymore, but this, I can help people. And, I kind of enjoy it.
Yeah.
Well, I do enjoy it.
Yeah.
More than kind of.
Sweet, man. Thank you for that. Sure. So the reason why I reached out to you in the first place, like I said to you in the message, I am trying to bring different experiences, different perspectives, different voices to the podcast. And fatherhood is such a broad range of experiences. And so I can only speak to what is true of my experience. And like I mentioned in the message, I don't want my platform, my podcast to become an echo chamber of just, you know, what we call the average stuff, even though there's nothing average about parenting and fatherhood and all of that jazz. But your experience is different than mine. And so the conversation that we're about to have is to give space on my platform to be able to consider fatherhood from a different perspective, from a different experience. So I'm excited about the conversation that we're going to have. And the first thing I want us to talk about is this concept of normal versus not normal.
Right.
I have a son and he is 2 years old. As far as we can tell, he is not autistic.
Right.
To me, that's normal.
Right.
You have children who are autistic. Mm-hmm. Is it fair to say that to you, that's normal or that's become normal?
That's a really interesting take. That's not where I thought you were going. That's a really interesting take. Yeah, it's my normal. I don't know anything else. You
right.
know? You sort of, and that can be a good thing and it can be a bad thing. It sort of depends on what you're dealing with. But, you know, for me, I think normal is relative, you know,
and that's the point. Yes.
And then, you know, there's like this whole, like people don't like using the word normal because like, what does normal really mean? I mean, who's normal?
Yeah.
I feel like we're all weird in some way.
In
right.
Some way,
and we just embrace it.
Yeah.
But like, That's a really interesting way to look at it. Yeah. It would be my normal. I mean, if we're defining things as normal, I think that would be my normal.
That would be your normal. Right.
Yeah.
And so in that frame of thinking about things, we're on the same wavelength. However, I'm going to let you speak to that. Have you ever gotten this feedback from people who are like, oh, Rob, like to give you the sense that maybe your circumstance is not normal. So what the hell is normal, right?
That's a really good question. And I think sort of the cliche thing that someone coined it a while ago is like normal's setting on a dryer, right? It's not related to like a person, but you know, one of the things that I've recognized just since we're on that kind of topic of kind of recognizing what's normal, like the reality is my life is really stressful, right? Like there's just challenges and just, you know, my kids drive me crazy, but kids drive parents crazy. It's just the way that it is.
That's it.
And they're amazing, but they drive me nuts. But I am so used to this life that I don't recognize the stress anymore. And so even though it has the same impact on my body and my mental health, I don't see it for what it is anymore because it's just my normal. Mm-hmm. And I have to sort of jar myself out of that to recognize that, yeah, like my anxiety is like through the roof right now. Like so that I can take care of myself, because you get so used to what you're doing that it becomes your normal.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes that's okay, but other times it can blind you to things that you need to work on or things that you need to address.
So take me back to finding out for the first time that your oldest son had autism.
Yeah.
Talk to me about, because here's what I want to get at, just to put it on the table. Here's what I want to get at. Parents, when we're becoming parents, we have expectations. Whether those expectations are implicit or explicit, I actually think we have both, right? Mm-hmm. I think a common expectation that parents have is that we want our children to be normal, whatever that means, because we don't know how our child is going to come. Right. So we have these expectations built off of everything that sort of our life experiences have led us to think is quote unquote normal. Great.
Yeah.
And then the child comes and then something is abnormal. And right. that sort of shatters one's expectations and just causes you to rearrange everything. So take me back to your first experience and walking that trajectory.
So my oldest is my ex-wife's son from her first marriage.
Okay.
And I've raised him since he was about a year old. So I don't have the benefit of, there's like a year and a half of his life that I wasn't a part of.
Okay.
So I don't have that reference. When I met them, he seemed, I mean, like a normal kid, you know, I mean, and we use the word normal.
Yeah.
And I feel like I don't think it should be a bad word. I think normal is relative, right? So normal for me is different than normal for you. So, yeah. I mean, whatever, who cares?
It's understanding what we mean by
correct
how we're using it in the context.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I feel like, when I didn't pick up on anything for a while, and then his behavior, part of it was he was, you know, there was still a custody battle going on with his biological father and paternal grandparents.
Okay.
And so there was a lot of abuse and stuff like that. And so when he did have problem behaviors, you know, he was in therapy and stuff like that, but it was all the kind of thing that you see that's sort of typical behaviors for a child who's in an abusive situation. And so we were helping him with those, but we sort of connected those dots and didn't see it for anything else. 2005, he was officially diagnosed with, they used to call it Asperger's, but it's autism now. And he'd have been about 5 years old. And one of the triggers for us was, we put him to bed, and it feels like this, and it doesn't make sense to people who haven't dealt with it, but we put him to bed, Gavin, and he woke up a different person. There was a massive regression that took place that shifted his personality, shifted everything. And it was literally like having to get to know a new person.
Oh, wow.
And you grieve the loss of a child who is still there.
Yeah.
Because
wow,
it's so profoundly different that you start entertaining ideas like aliens came down in the middle of the night and like swapped him out with a clone and didn't like transfer all of his personality into the body or something like that. Like crazy stuff. Right. But it starts to make sense. Like that's an explanation for what happened, because like you can't process that. Like how can he be so different in such a short amount of time and then never recover? And so that was really tough for a while. It was really tough. And, you know, you just sort of, you have to let go of the person who was and learn to, you got to get to know the person who is. And, you know, it's been 20 or 17 years now or something. So I only know the Gavin who is. And, but at the time I wouldn't wish that on anyone, right? I wouldn't wish that on any child to have to go through that. And I wouldn't wish that on a parent. The closest way to explain it is if you have a loved one with Alzheimer's and they have their on days and their off days, mm-hmm. you know, where some days they don't know where they are. They don't know who they are. They don't remember you. What, mm-hmm. like just completely different person. You see the same person, but mm-hmm. they're completely different on the inside. And that's what he was like after that switch flipped, and nobody knows what caused it or how it happened. It was diagnosed as childhood disintegrative disorder, which is a really rare form of autism that I don't think they diagnose anymore, but that's a very unusual case, right? So he was born quote unquote normal or typical, or he developed just like every other kid would until about 4 or 5. And then everything changed. So in his case, it felt like autism stole him from us, right? So you're grieving the loss of somebody. Mm-hmm. My other two have always been the way they are. So I don't know any different. And they're impacted very, very differently. They do really, really well. You know, they struggle with sensory related things like texture and sound and light and a lot of food stuff they don't like. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't a grieving process for that because it's just who they are. There wasn't a catalyst that like, it wasn't like a bait and switch is the wrong terminology, but you know what I mean? Like you're given one thing and then it's taken away.
Yeah.
With them, they were just born the way they are. And that's just who they are. And, you know, I mean, when I heard the diagnosis, I mean, I remember hearing those words from every doctor that we were at. Your whole world just sort of crumbles, because when they said autism for the second time, my thought was, oh my God, that's what Gavin was diagnosed with. Like, what's going to happen? Mm-hmm. Like, is it going to be the exact same thing? Mm-hmm. And it's not. And then when my last one was diagnosed, I didn't even see it because he was so different than his other brother. So all three of my kids are in different places on the spectrum, mm-hmm. and they all present in different ways, but they're all diagnosed with the same label.
Yeah.
The same condition or whatever. And so it gets really confusing. It's hard to understand as somebody who's involved with it all the time. It's even harder to get the layperson or everybody else to understand, because you're calling a million different things one word, and that's tough to do. But it does, and until you understand what it is, you feel like the world has ended, because you don't know what to expect. And a lot of times when they give you the diagnosis, especially back in the day, it was, I mean, they treated it sort of like a death sentence. Like it was just like a worst case scenario, like the worst thing that your kid could be diagnosed with. Mm. And it's not the case, you know? And we've come a long way. So it's not, you know, I don't even think about it anymore aside from work related stuff, because I work with the autism community. And so that I think about autism all the time, but I don't see autism when I see my kids. I just see my kids, you know, if they're driving me crazy, I just see my kids drive me crazy. Like, I don't care if they're autistic or not, they're driving me nuts. And they're, you know, it just, you know what I mean? Like just dad stuff.
Yeah.
The challenges that you face are a little bit different, and some of the obstacles are a little bit different, and you have to work harder for some of the things, but I mean, they're still just kids, you know, everybody's got something weird about them. You know, whether it's got a label now or it'll have a label 10 years from now, you know.
Back up and spend a little more time on mm-hmm. what you've repeated three times already. You're grieving a child that you still have.
Lost. Yeah.
Right? Like, so how did you go through that grieving process? What was that grieving process like?
It was awful. Honestly, it was awful. I remember with him, there was a lot of sort of bizarre medical things that sort of popped up in his life too. But along the way, for the first couple of years after he regressed, whenever he would be sick or run a fever, all of the symptoms would go away. And he would be the kid that was there before all this stuff happened. And that's even tough to think about. We call it, and it's a documented thing. It's something to do with temperature in the brain. Something I've talked to other parents who have experienced the same thing with their kid who's regressed. When the kid has a fever, a lot of the symptoms that they're experiencing go away. So if they weren't talking, they start talking again. Or if
that's incredible.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's tricky.
And it's absolute torture. It's horrible because you get these glimpses of somebody and then, you know, like, I've got to give him Advil because his fever is like 104.
Yeah.
But then you give them the Advil and then they go away again. And that's really hard because then you never know if it's going to happen again, or you find it, and this is terrible, but you find yourself like, are you going to get sick again?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Okay. Okay.
Could we just run a fever?
thank you for going there.
Yeah. Because
thank you for going there.
Yeah. Cause you just want, I mean, it's the truth. And I mean, it's like, nobody wants their kids to be sick, but like this is such a unique, situation. It's like the only way that you have contact with the person that you knew.
Yes.
You know, and it's like, and there's nothing that you can do that replicates that effect. And after a while it stopped happening. It hasn't happened for 10 years, 12 years, something like that. And it's rough because like you never fully heal that wound because every time you get that glimpse and it just sort of rips the scab off, right? Or the bandage off and it just reopens that wound because you just relived it again. And it kind of reminds me of like when my grandma was in a nursing home and I would go and I would visit her every single day. Mm-hmm. And every single day she would ask me why she was there. And every day I hated having that conversation because I was breaking her heart every day, over and over and over again for months and months on end. And that's sort of what it feels like when you get that glimpse of your child and then that it goes away and then you don't see them again. You know, I struggled with it a long time. I felt so guilty because it's one of those things where like, I think back on all of the things that I wish I would have done differently had I known that this was going to happen. Right. Like, like, you know, reading one more book or, spending, you know, staying at the park, at the playground, just a little bit longer, you know, because they wanted to do that, but I wanted to get home, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think of like, I wish I had done those things, you know, I mean, and you don't know, there's no way to know something like that was going to happen, but it gets you into this place where you realize like, you just don't know how much time you have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, the stuff like with him doesn't happen very often. It almost happens never, but anything can happen, whether it's something like this or a car accident or, you know, whatever. And it was something that I felt so guilty about for the longest time because I felt like I let him down. And I didn't. Like I know that. But like as a dad, like we have this irrational guilt that we carry with us anytime we can't fix something, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter who said, I could tell you like, it's not your fault. You did everything you could.
Yep.
It's in one ear and out the other, right? Like, you know, you already know that,
yep.
But it doesn't change the way you feel.
Absolutely.
It doesn't change the way you beat yourself up on the inside.
Absolutely.
And I battled with that for a really long time. And the those glimpses of him coming back with like the fevers and stuff, it was just gut-wrenching. And as terrible as it sounds, I was grateful when they stopped happening, because he didn't know any different. So it wasn't really affecting him. Like his experience really wasn't any, but it was our experience of him.
Of him, yeah.
And I just like, I couldn't take that anymore. Like it just, how many times can you say goodbye? I mean, like it's what it felt like. And then like, I'm thinking, okay, I need to get like into a support group, something where I'm talking to like other dads or their parents who have grieved a child. But then you start looking into that and it's kids who have died of cancer or like, parents who have actually buried a child. My kid is still here. So what right do I have to go there? You know what I mean? Because they would give anything
to have their child
back or to get those glimpses or to see them again. And then here I am like trying to get over feeling like my son had died when he's still here. I mean, so it's like this, it's just like this. I haven't thought about this stuff in a really long time. That's a really good question. It's indescribable. I've written about it. I have written about it before because I wanted to just sort of, I needed to get it out and not carry it with me. It was the whole point of writing was I would just write whatever I was carrying with me. And that was me putting it down. And then I could turn around and I could walk away. So it wasn't affecting me as a parent or me as a father.
Right.
And some of the stuff it's so hard to put down. It really is hard to put down. And I think I've never really put this down. I think I've just stopped thinking about it because it was that. And then, we sort of got adjusted to that and he was doing as well as somebody can do in that situation. And then he started having these bizarre health issues where he was diagnosed with epilepsy. And then he was diagnosed with this really rare autonomic disorder that his brain would just stop controlling like his blood pressure and his heart rate and his body temperature and stuff. And so they would call him autonomic crises. And so he'd be hospitalized for however long it would take for him to cycle out of it. There's nothing you can do to prevent it. There's nothing you can do to treat it. It's all like palliative care, supportive care. And, every time that he would have one, you know, there was a couple of times where they just like couldn't stabilize him. And, you know, they would tell us, you know, we're going to have to life flight him somewhere or, you know, you just need to prepare yourself that he may not come out of this one. And, you know, and that happens a dozen times or two dozen times over the years. And then he loses his immune system. Right. So now he has to do IVIG infusions twice a week where he takes donor antibodies and infuses them into himself to give him a functional immune system. And, so you just sort of bounce from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next. And I don't know that I have ever quite dealt with everything because there's like this backlog.
Yeah.
Right. And so you just keep moving forward so that you're not overwhelmed, you know, by that stuff. And then you have, you know, my other two kids who have done really well. But my youngest was nonverbal for the first 4 years of his life. We thought he was deaf, failed all his hearing screenings. And it turned out he was just ignoring the world and started talking at like his fourth or fifth birthday. Like he'd been talking the whole time. He just absorbed everything and just decided to like turn up the volume. And, you know, he had a rare fever disorder where he'd run these high grade fevers for no reason for 2 weeks at a time. And then he'd have like a week off and then he'd run a fever for 2 weeks and a week off. It went on for years and years and years. And so it's just this constant putting out fires like everywhere. So you never really come to grips or come to terms with everything in a healthy way. I think you come to grips with not coming to grips with it. It's probably the best way to look at that.
What I hear from everything that you've shared, a couple of things. it's like this cycle, being caught in this cycle of grief, but you're grieving different things at different times. Mm-hmm. And you might end up grieving the same thing at different points of that cycle, but you're going from grieving A to then grieving B, and then we're going to jump to C, but then we might be right back to B, and then we're going to get back to C, and then we revisit A, and then it's just...
Like you never complete the full process.
You never complete the full process.
And so it's one of those things where like trying to think of a way to... Kind of like a blood pressure cuff, right? Like if you squeeze... If you close off the valve and you squeeze the ball enough times, you know, the pressure builds up.
Sure.
But if you stop squeezing for a little bit, then that it loses pressure, yeah, right? And then you got to start all over again.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what it's like. You just, and then they become so intertwined that you don't know what's what, right? And things from, you know, dealing with one child can spill over into what you're kind of trying to deal with another child. And then you factor in post-traumatic stress from being a fire medic and seeing things that you can't unsee. Hmm. And then it just, you know, so truthfully, and I never give myself enough credit. I feel like I'm doing okay, you know, which sounds kind of, whatever, but like, can't really expect more than that at this point. But, you know, I mean, like my kids are good. You know, Gavin's medical issues have, I mean, he still has to do the IVIG infusions, but the medical issues have subsided. He's not being treated for anything anymore. He's never the same as what he was before.
Sure.
But he is who he is now. And he's the kindest, sweetest, most selfless person I've ever met in my life. He's 22. Mm. He is overcoming every obstacle that every doctor told us he never would. Mm. And, you know, now he's looking at job training and he wants to move out and do all these things. And I thought I was never going to have an empty nest. And now I'm going to have an empty nest. Right. And I'm excited about that. And my other two, you know, they're going to be fine. You know, I mean, there's challenges. Like we just mainstreamed for high school this year and everything was going really good until it wasn't. And so now they've been home for 2 weeks as they're waiting to transition to the online version of their high school.
Okay.
And, you know, I mean, there's those kinds of things, but sure. Like that's my normal.
Sure.
You know, I mean, I don't know what to do when things go right or when things go well or when things are easy. I'm like crisis management. That's my jam. I can handle a crisis. I can handle an emergency, but things going well, I don't know what to do.
So when things feel peaceful, you're sort of anticipating the other shoe to drop
anytime now.
In a major way.
Anytime now. Yeah. And, you know, and it was hard. It was hard to do this with two people, and it's not two people anymore. And it mm-hmm. hasn't been for a long time. And so, you know, there's never enough of me to go around. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like my family is amazing. My ex-in-laws, their grandparents are amazing. Everybody helps and does, you know, what they can. They're all actively involved in the kids' lives and all that stuff. But mm-hmm. like parenting wise, I'm all they have. Mm-hmm. And if I walk this fine line between burnout and self-care. Like it's you get so lost in what you're struggling with that you forget to take care of yourself. And then, you know, depression hits or, you know, you do burn out where you just don't even want to get out of bed, but you have to, because there's nobody else to take the kids to school. There's nobody else to, do the things that need to get done. Right. Cause you don't have that other person to rely on. And it's hard not to lose yourself mm-hmm. in all of this. And I think that's a pretty common, I mean, my situation's a little bit unique, but there's a lot of people out there that have very challenging situations, and the premise is the same. You know, you grieve the child you thought you were going to have. Mm-hmm. You learn to love and accept and embrace and cherish the one that you do have. And you, mm-hmm. as you sort of forge this new path forward, you deal with depression and mental health and all that stuff that comes along with the stress of everything and living in an unforgiving world that doesn't get it and isn't designed to accommodate, you know, needs and things like that. And, but you know, you just keep going. Like, I don't know what else to do, you know, quitting is never an option. Like quitting for a little bit is okay. You know, like take a break, but like can't quit. You know, you gotta find a path. You gotta find a way to get back up and you gotta keep moving. You know, like I built this business around, and this is going to sound really dumb, but I've been doing this advocacy stuff for 12 or 13 years now. And I built a business around it over the last couple. So like the podcast I do professionally, that's how I pay my bills, you know, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of marketing and advertising and consulting and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Business is doing really, really good, like better than it ever has. And yet I'm depressed still at times. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. Like I can pay my bills now most of the time. I don't know what to do. Like it's not scrambling. It used to be a constant struggle to like, you know, you're juggling the gas bill and the electric bill and groceries and car payment, house payment, all that stuff. Now I can, you know, for the most part, I can just make those payments like I've never been able to do before, mm-hmm. but I don't know what to do. Like I'm 44 years old and all I know how to do is struggle. I don't know how to thrive. And I think that's one of the problems that people in my situation find themselves in is that you get so used to that struggle that you don't know what else to do. You don't know that there's other ways of living, you know, that you don't always have to struggle. I mean, there can be a reprieve at some point, but you get so comfortable in your normal that you don't see the other options a lot of times.
So are you seeing someone like a therapist or regularly to kind of like help neutralize, if you will, mm-hmm. a lot of these things that you're talking about? And how helpful is that?
Well, therapy has been hugely helpful, especially after when I went through my divorce. I needed a lot of therapy then because I was married for almost 20 years. And my ex-wife left first. She left twice. Once was in 2014 and she was gone for a couple of years and then decided she wanted to come home. So we reconciled because mm-hmm. I thought that was the right thing to do for my kids, you know, put my family back together. Mm-hmm. And then she left again in 2019 and never came back. And, you know, we got divorced officially in February of 2021 because COVID delayed it for a little while. But, you know, I mean, I saw every day how much pain my kids were in. And I can't help but like, I mean, I was not a perfect husband, not a perfect father. I'm not a perfect anything, but I was a good husband and I'm a good dad. I feel like I can say that. I've heard it enough from people. And if I'm objectively looking at myself, I'm a decent dad.
Oh, don't.
And if nothing else, I'm still here.
Don't downgrade, Rob. Don't downgrade. Don't go from good to decent.
You know what I mean? Like it's, I feel somewhat comfortable saying that.
I'll give you a free upgrade back to good.
Okay. Thank you. I'm a good dad. I am a good dad. I don't always do everything right. But I learned from my mistakes for the most part.
That's it.
And my kids are loved and they're safe and they're, you know, all that stuff. Therapy really helped me to recognize that as much as I wanted to find blame in my, like I blame myself for everything. Like I must not have done this right. Or I must not have done that right. Or I must have done this wrong or whatever. You know, sometimes people just change and it's not, you know, it's not anybody's fault necessarily, but you know, mental health has a factor in things. And mm-hmm. when mental health is in play, it can have, you know, it drives people to make decisions that are incompatible with marriage. And, you know, it's hard to navigate some of that stuff without going to therapy, you know? And so I went to therapy for years, and then my therapist just moved to Georgia. So I have to actually find a new one right now. But therapy, medication, working out is like therapy in and of itself. The podcast has been really helpful for me, like being able to make something positive come from these things that I've struggled with, by kind of helping light the path for people who are coming behind me.
Yeah.
That it just does something to me that makes me feel like I'm like, it would be worth it in and of itself because it's my kids, but there's purpose to it, right? I'm able to help my kids, and I'm able to use my experience and the things that I've learned to help other people help their kids. And I think that's how I survive.
You ever have thoughts of just ending it all? Have you ever dealt with that at times? I know you just said, you know, you can't quit, but
yeah, the only time that I ever really, I entertained the idea of suicide was when I was a fire medic and I got hurt on a call. And I blew out a disc and I have an L5-S1 herniation in it. And it was supposed to, I wasn't supposed to be in pain for as long as it was, but I was in pain for like 10 years.
Oh, wow.
And when it was at its worst, there were times that I just wanted to drive my car into a tree just to make the pain stop. Mm-hmm.
I
think everybody thinks about suicide, but you don't like embrace the idea. It's sort of like, if you don't acknowledge that thought's in your head, it can grow to something much bigger than what it is. And so have I thought about stuff like that? I mean, I'm sure I've thought about stuff like that, but like I'm all my kids that go to my parents or my siblings, their aunts and uncles, which would be, I mean, they'd be good there, but like, they need me, and I can't take me away from them, you know? And like a lot of kids in this situation will need their parents for their natural life. You know, like parents will be raising their kids until the day they die. And then you worry about what's going to happen afterwards. Like who's going to take care of them when you're gone. Mm-hmm. And my oldest will be the only one that I have to worry about that with. But, you know, I mean, I didn't know where my how far my other kids would come along the way. And now they're doing really, really well and they'll be fine. They'll, you know, go to college or get a job, get married and have kids and do whatever it is they're going to do. But I enjoy watching them grow and learning from them so much so that I like, it's, almost like a safety thing. Like it's a barrier. Like you can't, that's so important to me that I can't do anything to jeopardize being able to experience that with them.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of the weird way that my brain processes all that stuff. But I mean, there's some dark days. I mean, the last couple of months, you know, I went through a breakup earlier in the late spring, and that was like my first like long-term relationship since I was married. And that was rough. It was really rough. And it triggered sort of this downward slide for me where like I've been on this weight loss journey. I had lost like 60 pounds or something like that. And, I just stopped caring about myself. I stopped taking care of myself. It would mm-hmm. be like, you know, shave every 2 weeks or something like that. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. just, I worked out of the house, so I didn't have to go anywhere. And, you know, you just sink into that kind of darker place. And, you know, I had to start crawling out of that, but it's just sort of a, you know, I guess I let those things happen because fighting it for me makes it worse. If I just embrace what I'm experiencing and then work with it, I can usually just work myself, you know, get myself to the other end without, you know, drowning. But, Yeah, I have no idea if this is where you thought any of this stuff was going to go.
No. To be quite honest with you, no. But I'm so glad that we're here because this is your real life lived experience.
Yeah.
And you have been more than gracious in not opening just a small crack. I mean, you have like knocked down 3 out of the 4 walls for me and listeners to just walk into what your world is. Like I said in the beginning, I work in a setting where, you know, parents find themselves in worst possible case scenarios with their children. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes as a support person, they feel very comfortable talking to me about things that they would otherwise not talk to family member or a spouse, even, you know, religious person, doctor, whatever the case is. One thing that I hear often are parents who, once we've established their relationship, begin to ask something to the effect of, I don't know why this is happening to me. What has been your bout with that question? Have you even asked yourself that question?
I think the only time that I really was hit with that was when I was going through my divorce, because everything else really didn't happen to me. It happened to my kids. And so there was a lot of like, why is this happening to them kind of thing. But then,
is that partly because you are your dad, you're protecting, you feel this sense of protecting them.
It could totally be it. I'm just saying, like, when it came, the first time that I really remember looking at the situation, being like, why is this happening to me, was when my ex left the first time, because I didn't see it coming. I was completely blindsided by it. And it went down in a way that traumatized the kids. And like my whole world fell apart, right? I mean, she was my best friend for almost my entire adult life. And then to just sort of turn on me like that, and then not just leave me, but leave the kids. And there were times that I was just drowning. There's still times that I feel like I'm drowning.
Sure.
And it's like, why me? Why is this happening to me? Like, why do I have all of this responsibility? Why can't it just be like spread out just a little bit more evenly, you know, across the playing field? I guess, I don't know. There's just something, there's something about me that like, I don't get stuck there.
Okay.
Really. And like, I've been hands-on with my kids since the day they were born, and hands-on with Gavin since I first met him. Mm-hmm. And I've adopted him and everything else. And I just raised him as my own. I don't see him any differently than I see my other kids. But when I was a kid, there's two things I wanted to grow up to be. One, I wanted to be an FBI profiler. That was one way I went to school for. And then I just wanted to be a dad and a husband. And I think a lot of that's because my parents, you know, my mom and dad have been married for 46 years now, 45, 46 years now.
Okay.
I'm the oldest of 6 kids. And so my parents have been like, I wanted what I thought like my parents had, which is weird. Like I wanted my own version of that. But so no matter how bad things get, in some weird twisted way, I'm living the dream. Right? Which sounds so weird. Mm-hmm. But like, if my goal was to be a dad, if that's what I ultimately wanted out of life, was to raise my own kids, I'm doing that.
You are.
It's not easy.
It. Yeah.
But that's so, I don't know if that's why I see things the way that I do, or, and I'm not, I don't know what, you know, field you're in, but like with me, when I was a medic, you see things that change your outlook on life.
100%.
And you know, I've had, especially kids, kid calls were the bad ones, right? I mean, those are the really bad ones. And they give you an outlook on life that just sort of like, it changes you at your core. Mm-hmm. And whatever I have been through throughout my life has changed me into who I am right now, where I don't really look at things as like, oh, why is this happening to me? It's I feel really lucky in a sense because like I work from home. I have been involved with my kids since the day they were born. I've witnessed almost every milestone they've ever hit. Mm-hmm. I get to see them do things for the first time. They teach me how they see the world in a different way. Mm-hmm. And I get to help parents. I get to talk to people like you. I get to be creative and help people and provide for my kids while I'm doing it. You know, I mean, so like, I feel like all of this has happened for a reason and it's built up to this point where now everything is starting. Now all the pieces are connecting and the gears are starting to turn and all of that hard work and everything that I went through has led to this moment. And like, it's my turn, you know, it's my turn to just catch a break.
Yeah.
And get my kids a better life and, rebuild the parts of my life that were taken away or that I lost.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of parents of autistic kids will be the same way. Like they don't look at it as like, why is this happening to me? It's challenging. It's hard, but there is an experience that you get with these kids that just changes who you are. You appreciate things differently. You don't take things for granted as easily. And every little thing that happens is an accomplishment and you celebrate every one of those things. And I don't want to miss any of them, you know? So no matter how bad it gets, I always know that there's somebody out there who's dealing with worse, you know? And I have a lot of those parents come to me, you know, I jump on Zoom calls with parents, just like, I can't fix anything, but they just want to talk. And mm-hmm. so I just sit here and I listen mm-hmm. and bounce ideas off of me or whatever. And it's just, you know, and you experience the fact that like that really sucks. Like, I can't imagine what they're going through right now. And you recognize that, you know, like as bad as I thought it was, it really like, it could be worse. And so I think I've built something that constantly reminds me that things could be worse. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. And so it's always reinforcing that more positive outlook, I guess.
Yeah. Just kind of looking at, determined to look at the glass half full.
Yeah.
As like the baseline of, yeah.
And it's not always, I mean, there's times that it's sure. hard to do that.
Sure.
And you really have to like twist and contort yourself to like find something positive in the day. But you know, my oldest wasn't supposed to make it past his teens. You know, I mean, they told us he probably wouldn't live past his teenage years. And he's 22. He's going to be 23 in January. And all the stuff that was a threat to him is gone. You know, so I mean, like, wow. As much as he drives me crazy, he does drive me crazy. He's here to drive me crazy.
Yeah.
And so I see it more as I always have the perspective, like, you know, yeah, I'm frustrated. Yes, I'm annoyed. Yes, whatever else is running through my head. But like, he's still here mm-hmm. to do that. Mm-hmm. And it could have very easily gone the other way. Mm-hmm. I don't take that for granted.
Could say at this point, really, one, I didn't have any preconceived notion as to where this conversation was going to go. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that it is where it is and it's gone where it's gone. This just speaks to, I guess, the reason why I felt the need to reach out to someone like you to be able to bring this experience to light and to bear for people like me whose experience are entirely different from the one that you have. As we're coming down to the hour, you are more apt to talk to fellow parents who are dealing with not just autism, but with what what someone like me, and from my perspective, would say when life hands you a different deck of cards. Mm-hmm. Number one, two very quick things. Number one, does that bother you when people sort of speak in a way that makes that distinction?
No, I don't. Well, I don't do compliments very well. So if someone's saying like, if they're saying it in a way that is like supposed to like build me up or something like that, like sure. I just don't take compliments very well. But I also don't think I'm just a dad, right? I'm doing what any dad, in my view, what any dad would do for their kids. I mean, mm-hmm. you do anything for your kids, right? Mm-hmm. This is just what my anything is. And I don't think it makes me different or special or anything like that. It's just, I mean, there's a lot of dads that wouldn't do that, but there's a lot of dads that just walk away from their kids in general, even without the challenges. So I just see myself as a dad, you know, like you're a dad, I'm a dad. I got friends who are dads of like typical kids. And I got friends who are dads of autistic kids and kids mm-hmm. with disabilities. And, you know, the life is a little bit different. The challenges and experiences are different, but being a dad is the same thing. Mm-hmm. You love your kids unconditionally, right? Sometimes you really have to stretch that to get there, right? Like I've called my mom, I don't know how many times, because when I was a kid, they would tell me, this is like one of my favorite things. If you, when you, I can't wait till you have a kid of your own, Rob, and then you'll know exactly how I'm feeling right now. And I have called her, I don't know how many times over the years. And I'm like, you win. You were absolutely right. I was a whatever kind of kid, just like, just, can we just call it even? Can you just send up the signal to whoever is doing this? And we can just say we're good and not, you know, mess with it anymore. But, you know, I mean, we're just parents, you know, and I wouldn't know what to do if I were running my kids, trying to juggle sports and, you know, extracurricular things.
Sure.
Like to me, that would be overwhelming because I have no idea. I'll bounce between doctor's appointments and therapies and whatever else. Like it's
no one's business.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. It's just, you know what I mean? It's just, and we can learn from each other, even though our situations are different, because there's outlooks on life that I have that could be beneficial to you. And there are outlooks on life that you have that can give me perspective that I may have lost. And so I think these conversations are really important. I'm glad that you reached out.
The question that I was going to ask you mm-hmm. first as the last question, but then I asked that other question. So now it really is the last question.
Go for it.
Is you are more apt to talk to fathers who are not just parenting autistic children or an autistic child, but just a child who changes the dynamics of what that parent might have expected in extraordinary ways. Mm-hmm. And so now they're doing their readjustment to their version of normal.
Their new normal, yeah.
Or they might be struggling. So how have you been able to come alongside a father who is struggling to adjust to his new normal? What would be, you know, 2 to 3 things that you would say to a dad who is struggling to adjust in that way?
I think the first thing that I tell people is that, especially dads have this weird thing where they don't show emotion mm-hmm. or they got to be strong for everybody else, or they can't feel something that they feel. They don't embrace that emotion. Mm. And I feel like that becomes like a cancer mm-hmm. and it's toxic. I tell people that you're allowed to feel whatever you feel. You are allowed to be angry, resentful, sad, happy, whatever it is that pops into your head. You're allowed to feel that way because you're human, right? You have no control over that.
Absolutely.
What you do with those feelings and how you choose to deal with them is what you are directly responsible for.
Yes.
So there is none of this. You shouldn't feel guilty for resenting your child. You shouldn't feel guilty for being frustrated with your child. I mean, just because they have a disability doesn't make them any less of a kid, right? I mean, the stuff that drives me nuts with my kids is just typical kid stuff.
Yeah.
Right. It would drive you crazy. It would drive me crazy. I'm sure I did it to my parents. And it's like a rite of passage, right? They're doing what they're supposed to do. You're allowed to be human. You can't fix everything. You know, take a breath, take care of yourself. Self-care is so important. You know, you have to put back into your physical and emotional bank accounts, because it's really easy to spend yourself into bankruptcy, like emotionally, you know, and physically, to where you burn out and you're no good to anyone. So taking care of yourself is important. Allow yourself to feel what you feel and then find a constructive way of dealing with it. You know, work out or go see a therapist. Not that anybody wants to see a therapist, but go see a therapist. They're amazing. My therapist told me that, you know, the priority, the hierarchy of things is you take care of yourself, take care of your marriage or your relationship with the other parent. And then together you take care of the kids. Because if you're good with yourself, you're a better partner to the other parent. And if you're in a better relationship with the other parent, then you're a more united front for the kids. Right. And the kids, it's that whole like trickle down economics thing. Like the kids benefit from me taking care of myself, benefit from taking care of the other parent and, and being connected on the same page, whatever. And those are things that I think get lost in the shuffle. A lot of times we forget, until it's too late.
Man,
I don't know if that helps, but
no, listen, I'm sure someone is going to hear this and really appreciate those words, coming from the lips of someone who can relate to them in a more closer way than I could. Where can people subscribe to your podcast? How can people get behind what you've been doing over the past decade or so?
You can just go to theautismdad.com. There's links to everything there. And I'm on all the podcasting apps. So you can just look up the Autism Dad podcast and subscribe. That'd be awesome. A big thing that would help is if you share the stuff on Facebook, because I've been locked out of Facebook for like 6 months now. As much as I hate Facebook, you don't realize how big of an impact it has until you can't access it anymore. But, you know, share the stuff. If it's helpful for you, you know, there might be somebody else who can connect with it and it can impact their day in a positive way. So, and you can always reach out to me. I'm always happy to talk to people and help out and you know, anything I can to support other parents.
My guy, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate this conversation. I'm just letting you know this right now. There's going to be a part two and perhaps even a part three of our chat, because there are some things that you said there that I definitely want to dive into a little bit deeper to gain a better understanding of what these terms mean to you and your experience. So
this was a great conversation. Like, I have lots of conversations and this is one that I'm going to remember walking out of this.
I appreciate
very, very positive.
That. I really appreciate that.
Well, I do too. I needed some perspective today. So I appreciate that. Thank you.